8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you with another amazing Croc podcast. And I say amazing because I have Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin, on the other side of the computer screen. Angel, after all of this week of me being away and you fighting groundhogs and all the sorts of nonsensical nonsense that goes on in each of our little lives, welcome back to the podcast.
It is always good to be on the show because it gives me a little sense of peace and happiness. I'm ready.
Oh, fantastic. I've been having a really nice week down the beach with my lovely wife and getting some sun, catching no fish, but having fun catching no fish, and just enjoying the water and the sand and the sun and just a little bit of a relaxation. And I would recommend, I think we've done a vacation module for our survivors, and I would highly recommend you guys get away, and I hope you all can do that. We're going to sort of, as my kids would tell me, same, same, but different. As you recall, the last two episodes were part of a module about the advantages and disadvantages of getting a second opinion. Well, we're going to kind of take a detour, maybe on a parallel road, but perhaps a different road. And today we're going to be talking about when it's time to move on from the doctors that are currently taking care of you to perhaps a new set of doctors. And Angel, I'm going to tell you right now, it seems easy, but it's very difficult. It's probably one of the hardest decisions that our survivors will have to face.
Wow. Let's get into it then.
Yeah. And I think you have changed doctors. You've sometimes out of necessity because they've left the practice or they've moved or they've gone to a different practice, but sometimes it was on your own initiative, right? That you wanted a change.
Absolutely. It's happening to me right now, actually.
Yeah. So, you know, you understand the difficulty. So, Angel, what do we do here on the Croc podcast for our survivors? We do everything and anything we can to help them on their journey, right? And one of the things that I think we do very well is point out the weak points. I use point twice, pointing out the weak spots of the medical system to make our survivors' lives better. And I think it's what we do, and I think we do it quite well. But we're not punitive about it. We're not Geraldo Rivera, like Eyewitness News, trying to do an expose. I think we do it with love. And number two is that it starts with me in the sense that I hope that the survivors will gain insight and realize the care that they deserve, not what they've been getting. And by starting with some of the stories that I've personally been involved with, I think that makes it a safe place for everybody and not just for our survivors. I hope to reach some of the other medical people who might hear the podcast and hear another doctor talk about some of the things that they could have done differently and done better. And I think that that's one of the things that we do well. And we've already spent two episodes looking at the advantages and the disadvantages of a second opinion. But now we're going to take the next step. When is it time to make that change? And as I said, it's not as easy as it looks. Angel, some of the podcasts we've done, we've looked at and we've really reckoned the horror stories. We've told these stories, and I have a secret to tell everybody. Every single practitioner, if they practice long enough, will commit a horror story. And if you remember, we had done that beautiful episode where we re-aired some of the actors.
Yes.
Doing the reenactments of some of the things that have happened to our survivor. And the one that I was guilty of was the Christmas tree. And I'm not going to go over it again. But if you guys could put it as a link, perhaps somebody who's listening to this show might want to hear that particular.
Yeah, it was definitely, it was the original air date was on September 26th and October 3rd. It's called Words, and we put it into two parts. So that's definitely something we'll put the links in, no problem.
Yeah, and you remember some of these horror stories. Let's go through a bunch of them. So one of the horror stories that our survivors have told us is getting their diagnosis over the phone. Sometimes not even by their doctor, sometimes by the nurse, and every once in a while from the front desk. Then there's the 2-minute diagnosis, where a doctor runs into a room and tells the patient they have cancer and then runs out of the room during that period of time when the survivor has that deer in the headlights and they really can't even breathe, forget about even talking, they can't even breathe. Yeah. And then the practitioner uses that moment of sort of silence to take that as, okay, I'm done, I'll see you later. That's not a good thing. Also, it's not always the doctor. I actually knew one of the greatest doctors I ever met, one of the doctors that was so influential to me. He was my grandfather's doctor. He was just a good old-fashioned internist, fantastic though. But getting him on the phone or getting to get an appointment with him, he had an overprotective staff. I call it the obstructionist receptionist. Also, you remember from that the podcast words, the judgmental nurse that felt like the patient who had cancer was infectious and kind of wanted to melt into the wall. And then there's also the undignified, practitioners who don't really care about the dignity of the patient. You know, they'll walk into a bathroom, you know, to do their rounds while the patient's on the toilet, or they might expose a patient in front of other people. Those types of things, which are completely, unspeakable. This is going to be a strange one, and we've talked about this, and we should probably do a podcast on it. But the office decor and cleanliness, besides maybe like a restaurant, I think a doctor's office should be absolutely spotless. It should be clean. There shouldn't be any, bugs or dead things on the ground. There shouldn't be dirt. I mean, it's got to be, even if it's you're not doing procedures. I think that the survivor deserves an environment of cleanliness and environment because it's self-respect. And I know a lot of doctors, I think, feel if they work in a clinic that might be in an underserved area, I think they feel, well, we don't have the resources. We don't have enough people to, to clean and all that kind of thing. Angel, what sits in my office next to the refrigerator and the microwave? Do you remember?
I do. It's a vacuum.
Correct. So I don't need anybody vacuuming my office or in my surrounding area. Doctors, nurses, I don't care who you are. Make sure you provide a clean environment for your patients because it really makes a difference. We've heard this one a million times, wait times. One of the greatest oncologists in our area in the Hudson Valley is fantastic. He's very smart, very caring, very devoted. But you got to wait 2.5-3 hours to see him. You know what? you've heard the expression. If there's a 3-hour line to see Jesus, I guess I'm not going to meet him. So, it's just one of those types of things. You really have to be cognizant. And I get the whole thing, there's only so much of me and all this, but you got to do better. I don't even like to have people wait 10 minutes, but that's me. The other thing, callbacks, especially we talked about my chart. Sometimes patients are getting results of their studies ahead of the fact that when the doctors haven't called them back or don't return calls. How many stories have we told about the doctors who don't call their patients back?
Oh, too many.
Terrible. Also, we want to make sure that the way that your doctor is communicating with you, that it's done in a very patient manner, that they're teaching. Physicians were not always healers. I mean, we're healers, I hope, but we're supposed to be teachers. That's like our number one job is to teach people to be preventative, like, Hippocrates and all those people. They talked about preventative medicine, how to keep people from getting sick. And that's about teaching. We have a great responsibility to teach. And so many doctors are condescending, pacifying, or I'm going to use another SAT word for you, pedantic. That means it's almost like they get on their soapbox and they're sort of lecturing to you like you're a medical student or a resident. And you're just a scared cancer survivor / thriver. Do you need a doctor in a stiff white coat, trying to tell you? Talk to you like using $3 million words. I don't think you need that. And the other thing, one of the other things I could be a little guilty of is I have to keep appropriate in the sense that I use humor a lot to help get a survivor through a tough time or get them through a tough moment. But sometimes, you know, I have to know when to curb it. And, you know, and I don't want to seem like I'm being, you know, not being sensitive or not being, you know, concerned, you know, duly concerned about the, you know, about the severity of the situation. And the other thing, I see so many doctors, we talked about this also, Angel, the doctors who don't look at you, they look at their cell phones or their computers and they're typing and they're not, you know, you think they're listening to you, but they're not looking at you. And, you know, it feels very dehumanizing. And there's a million other stories we've told, you know, over the couple of years we've been on the air. So I'm going to stop here, but your thoughts.
Oh, I had to take a deep breath because, you know, everything you touch base on, I just kept thinking about memories, you know, and I don't want to get into my own stories, but, you know, like we've said before and many times, when you go see a doctor, you want to be able to feel comfortable, safe environment, a cleanliness environment. You want to be able to understand your doctor, be able to feel like you can speak with him, disagree with him, respectfully ask for a second opinion. And what I just said in one lump sum in that sentence is about like five or six episodes we've done right there.
Exactly. Yeah, no, 100%. And actually, I'm going to, if you don't mind me, you sort of piggybacking on that statement, you know, because we're going to put together a checklist. Now, Rod, you have to listen to this episode because I need you. Angel and I are going to help you put together a checklist. We're going to put this checklist on our website. It's going to be your, you know, what are the criteria that you feel your doctors, what do you deserve in your doctors? And we're going to put this checklist together for you. And it's going to be like one of those checklists where you have a scale from 1 to 10 or 1 to 5, and Rod will put it together for us. And you'll take each of these 15 bullet points and you'll grade your doctor or the person that you want to see, the person you're seeing and the person you want to see, or you'll put out the number that you feel is appropriate for you. And I think it would be a really good tool for our survivors, Angel.
I want one.
Yeah, cool. So let's go through it without further ado. We'll make this a nice, quick and easy podcast, a post-vacation quickie. So we'll start with trust. I call it trust, transparency, and truth. And what I tell patients when I'm talking to them, when I get to the hard stuff, you know, the informed consent, the potential side effects, prognosis, staging, what I tell them, I said, listen, I'm very optimistic about your case, but I do have some things I'm concerned about, and I have to discuss them with you, because if I don't tell you the truth now, we're not going to have a foundation to build our relationship on. We have to make sure that you guys get someone you can trust, who's transparent and truthful with you. You don't want to hear anybody. Now, I'm a, you know, eternal optimist, and you know that I practice, you know, optimistic medicine until proven otherwise. But I'm also very truthful and very transparent. So we're going to put that as number one. Number two, does your doctor care about you? So the way I put it is, do they feel your pain? Meaning a doctor should feel, have empathy, have the capacity to know you're in pain and to feel your pain, and to have the compassion to feel badly that you're in pain and have a proper amount of concern for you as a human being who's suffering, whether it be physical suffering or psychological suffering or fearfulness or anxiety or whatever. Does your doctor feel your pain? Is your doctor kind? Are they a kind person? Are they someone? And my kids teach me this, you know, kindness is not empathy, compassion, and concern. Kindness is just, is it a person who has a soft spirit? So Angel, I'm on your podcast every Monday, and every Monday I try to tell your listeners about the type of man you are and what sets you apart and why I admire you so much in your spiritual podcast. And I think kindness is the word that I would use, because you really give everybody the benefit of the doubt and you approach an interaction with kindness. Now, sometimes you get kicked, you know, by someone calling your number and being angry at the medical system and they take it out on you. But because you're a kind person, you don't, you know, you don't spew out venom, even though you're getting, you know, those fangs in your neck. So, you know, kindness from your practitioner is important. You also want your practitioner to be competent, excellent, and experienced. So, Angel, I have a question for you, and mm-hmm. it's one that vexes me, and I think I do know the answer, because although I do give my patients sort of a mixed message on this one, do the surgeons, the ones that cut you, the ones that only see you a couple of times, you know, they do the cutting, and then they see you a couple of times, and then they ditch you, do they have to be, like, really, you know, this cool buddy doctor? Or do they just have to be great at what they do? And I think over the years, I've said, hey, listen, I don't care what your surgeon's personality is, just as long as they're great, just it's fine. But I think that in this day and age, especially what we're trying to advocate for our survivors, is to have all doctors and nurses and practitioners to have these characteristics. Would you agree?
I would agree.
Okay. Also, is your practitioner, are they available and are they accessible? Now, everybody knows that I scream on the top of Bear Mountain that every doctor and nurse should have and give out their cell phone numbers. And many do, you know, actually, and I'm happy to see over the decades, more and more doctors are doing that. But even if they don't, I mean, do you feel confident that if you left the message, you're going to get a timely call back, or that if you need to get in to see them, will you get an appointment that's not 3 weeks down the road? So that's another thing that's important. And then the other thing is, you know, the connection. You know, you could have a great doctor who really cares about you and has nothing but concern for you, but you're just not connecting. They're just the wrong fit for you. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. So remember the story I told you? There was a woman who was a bit more on the fancy side. You know, she was a little older, and I think she was expecting, you know, Ben Casey to walk in the room, or, you know, one of those old fashioned doctors with the white coat and the whole thing. And imagine when I walked in, she must have thought I was the biggest ass clown that ever lived. I was with my jersey and my sneakers and the whole thing. And I don't think I got both feet in the door. I think I got the 1 foot in the door, and she went, no, 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 no. This is not going to work. 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 And she just, like, went, almost had it. Like, I felt like she was going to literally, her head was going to explode. And, you know, I slowly had to win her over and calm her down and get her to know that, you know, but in all fairness, you know, my flavor of medicine is not the same, is not the flavor for everybody, nor is anyone else's. I don't care if they're the greatest doctors from Memorial Sloan Kettering or MD Anderson, you know, you have to connect with your doctor.
Yeah.
I know a lot of, I know in the old days, God, when I trained, I think there was like all OBGYNs were male, but things were changing, meaning the residency programs were starting to really fill up with a lot of females. So now we see the opposite. We see mostly females. And for a female to want to see another female physician, there's nothing wrong with that. Or there might be an old dude like me who may not want to, you know, have a young 30-year-old, you know, general practitioner doing a rectal exam on, you know, that wouldn't be me, but I'm just saying, you know, you have to make sure that the fit is good for you. The culture of the team. So remember I talked about the obstructionist, the receptionist. So the front, you know, everything starts from the person you talk to on the phone, the receptionist, the clerical staff, all the way down to the nurses, to the doctors, to the therapists, to every single person in that office. And what I want to make sure that you guys know is I want your doctor or your practitioner or caretaker to be a strong leader for you. And that leader to have such strong skills as a leader that they can actually influence the culture of their department. So that when a person walks into radiation oncology, they're experiencing what I want them to experience. Even if they don't meet me, you know, for an hour, I want them to know what I stand for before we even have a word. That's the kind of leader that I want you guys to have. I also want to make sure that now this is going to be a little bit of a paradox, because when people know me, the last thing they think of is calm. But calm doesn't mean, so, you know, that you have to be quiet or I'm actually a very loud person, but I'm actually a very shy person. So people who know me would think that'd be not true, but it actually truly is. And when things really, when the shit hits the fan, I become, instead of getting more crazy, I become calmer and calmer and calmer, because I think the environment that we need to, you know, even if it's a loud and boisterous and try to make people laugh and look at things a different perspective, I think at the end, you want to inspire confidence. You want to make sure that your survivor feels confident in your confidence. You want to exude confidence. You want confidence coming out of your pores, and you want them to then latch on to that confidence so they can climb that ladder. They climb that ladder with your push of confidence. You also want to have a familiarity with your doctor or your practitioner. I want to say family member, friend, but not in the conventional sense of your friend or your neighbor or whatever. It's a special relationship, but it is on that level of feeling like they're part of your family, that they're truly a friend to you. And I come up with the quote from Hoosiers, the movie, when the coach, Gene Hackman, said to the kid who was covering the star of the other team, like, he goes, "Buddy, I want to know the flavor of gum that kid is chewing." And after Buddy fouls out, because he was just all over this kid and he was successful, he goes up to the coach and he goes, "Spearmint," you know, he knew. And I think that we should, and again, we've done podcasts on getting to know your patient, getting to know their essence, getting to know something about them. What's their essence? Is it your family, your hobbies, your work, whatever? Do you like to read? Do you like and you'll be shocked about the things you'll find out from people. How many war heroes we've met, Angel, right? How many people who have met presidents or met popes that you would have never even suspected? And like I always say, you better know your patient's favorite color and their favorite food. So that's the familiarity that I think you guys deserve. Selflessness. So you also want a practitioner who doesn't feel that they're going to work like it's a job. You don't want them feeling like, okay, I'm going to start at 7 and I'm done at 5 and that's the end of it. It's not a job. It's a calling. It's a sacred, holy practice that it's an honor and a privilege that someone is trusting you to come to you for care. And you want to get that feeling from your practitioner, that they really feel that what they're doing is something that's very important, very sacred. As I said, something very holy. You also want someone who's reliable and consistent. I walked into, I hit 60 and I guess I said, well, maybe I should check out the old ticker, right? So I go and, you know, one of the doctors told me to go to this guy. You know, he's this great doctor. He's, you know, terrific and he's brilliant and whatever. And I had this amazing first, meeting with him, and he puts me on some medicine for my cholesterol. And, I ask him if he wants me to get a stress test, and he goes, "No, you're good, but get this cardiac CT scan," which I do. And, come back, do blood work, and then I'll see you in 6 months. And I go see the guy in 6 months, and it's like I never walked in the door. He had no idea why I was there, no idea, what I was there for, so obviously you want somebody who's going to be reliable and consistent. You also have to be realistic. I mean, you might have the greatest doctor in the world, but they may practice at the University of Alaska, or a place that you'll never be able to get to. So you have to be realistic about who you're choosing. You also want to have a practitioner who goes above and beyond. You want to have someone who's going to, you feel like, hey, listen, I really want to get that second opinion. And it's not like, instead of walking out being angry, you want somebody to not only not be angry at you, but help you, facilitate, call somebody for you, put your records together. I can't tell you, to the dismay of my accountant, how many thousands of dollars I spend, FedExing records and discs to doctors in the city that I know they're going to lose, and I have to do it twice or three times because they're all a bunch of knuckleheads. But, you know, those, that's the above and beyond that we're, that you guys deserve. Also Judgment Angel. There's a lot of, you know, I wish life was clear cut and black and white, but it sure ain't, that's for sure. And when I do talk to a tertiary care specialist in the city about a case that's not clear cut and has a lot of what I call nuance, you know, a fence sitter where you can't really go to a guideline or a paper or, you know, look at the literature and say, what's the latest and greatest data, you know, there's just doesn't exist. But someone who's good and experienced will be able to have the judgment to take that experience and be able to extrapolate a plan for somebody who comes in, who doesn't have a really true, clear situation. So somebody who has that ability to have judgment, and it's practical common sense. So many times doctors are book smart, but as far as common sense goes, dumb as posts, right? Dumb as a bag of rocks. And you want somebody who has good common sense and has good old fashioned hillbilly judgment, and knows enough to be able to extrapolate the best fit for you. And you know, I think that's important. And lastly, we'll end the podcast on, you want your practitioner to be systematic, deliberate, you know, to go, this is where my OCD actually serves me well. It doesn't serve me well in my personal life, but it serves me well in my professional life. Like everything, boom, down that list, like a bullet list. I was like, have that mind where everything is absolutely has to be done in a very, very methodical way. And I think you deserve that. So we have 15 points, Rod. We're going to put this beautiful thing together. We're going to have scales for each of these, and it'll be on our website. We'll give Rod, what do you want to give him, 2 weeks?
Yeah, that's about right. He's gone. He's on the way. You know how he goes.
I know the way he rolls.
That's it.
Angel Santana, have faith, let it begin. Thank you, my friend, for enduring the week and holding up the fort for me when I was away getting some sun and fun. I know you'll be going to the beach next week, and I wish you the best. Everybody, have faith, let it begin. I told you how kind and what a good man Angel is. He does a lot of good stuff for his listeners. And I think a lot of times, even though it may not be specific to the cancer survivor, I believe you guys would benefit. God bless you, my dear friend.
Oh, thank you. And I just want to point out one thing. You know, the Croc Podcast has reached another milestone, closing in as of right now at 6.